Welcome to the Retzel Health Law Hotspot. Health Law Hotspot is a podcast for physicians and health professionals that covers the legal issues and trends that affect the healthcare industry.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Health Law Hotspot. I'm Erica Adler, shareholder and leader of the healthcare practice at Retzel and Andrus. And today we're going to be talking about the exciting topic of security issues facing healthcare practices, particularly from the technical HIPAA perspective. Today, I'm joined by Fahim Ahmad, who's a service manager with Technical Doctor and has been there for the last 5 years with a focus on HIPAA compliance and cost-effective IT solutions in the healthcare world to address those issues. He's responsible for three primary areas with his company: team satisfaction, client satisfaction, and service department profitability. Basically, he has over 15 years of progressive experience in the financial services and technology industry. And what we're going to be focusing on today is largely his IT expertise and the guidance that he provides to his clients with regard to compliance with HIPAA. So welcome.
Thank you. I really appreciate you taking time in your day to have me on. So,
well, we're glad to have you here, and hopefully I did description of what you do justice, and I'm sure we're going to learn a lot more about what you do. So let me start off by just saying that, you know, I'm a healthcare lawyer, which means I handle regulatory and transactional issues. And one of the issues that we deal with our clients very often is HIPAA. And when we work with our clients, what we do is try to often educate the employees as well as just the management level personnel about what HIPAA means, what they need to do to comply. We often will do some training and testing on that. We'll walk around their office. We'll try and point out things that we see. And often then we get questions, you know, does a patient want the copy of their record? They want to change their record. Oh no, somebody lost their laptop, et cetera. So we're really dealing with kind of the practical aspects of HIPAA and, you know, sometimes the reporting element of that. What we don't do, and which many of our clients often fail to do, is to also look at the technical side of HIPAA, which is, are their computer systems, their software, their technology meeting the standards of HIPAA? Do they have appropriate protections in place? Are they training people appropriately with regard to that? And do they know what to do when there is a technical HIPAA issue that arises? So I think it's really interesting to have you here today. You kind of do the whole other half of what we do, and which I, you know, realistically know very little about. So thank you so much for coming and talking about this. And why don't we start off by you just telling us a little bit about your involvement with HIPAA, what you want people to kind of know about this aspect of HIPAA and compliance.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple parts here, right? First and foremost, when it comes to HIPAA, it sounds like a scary word. What people don't realize is there is a lot of fines that have been given out for violations of HIPAA. And they've been as little as $100 to as much as several million dollars for some very large organizations. And many times people think negligence is a defense, but it's not when it comes to HIPAA. And then the minute you start becoming a repeat offender or, you know, say, I didn't know, it ends up just accelerating as far as fines go. So one of the big things we do, kind of similar to what you do, is we also do a level of what we call a HIPAA security risk assessment on the technical side. So there's essentially three parts to it. We do sort of a physical walkthrough, you know, things of the nature like, no one has passwords written down in areas that they shouldn't, right? Like people have it under the keyboard or little tricky spots they like to keep it. Are there any patient health records out visible to the public eye, right? Whether it be vendors or other people who have no business looking at that information. Is there a back door open that, you know, from a security standpoint can affect that? That's one aspect. The other is the policy and procedure side. Do they have business associate agreements with all vendors that have access to their office? You know, do they have a proper checklist of terminating an employee, hiring an employee? Do they have a formal security policies and procedures in place? And what I mean by that is, it's common sense, you know, that, hey, don't share your password with someone, but having like a written document kind of being the rules that your organization abides by is really, really effective. And so what we see out there a lot for the people that do it the right way is things like, you know, employees will change their passwords every 90 days. Employees will not share their passwords. Employees will lock their computers when they step away. Employees will have a lockout policy enforced, you know, to kind of name a few of the items that would potentially be on there. And then the third thing, which is probably the biggest one, is we do essentially a network security scan of their systems. So we're looking for things like, do they have a proper HIPAA compliant firewall that's robust enough to meet the HIPAA guidelines? Do they have proper anti-malware, antivirus on there? Do they have people user accounts set up in such a way where it's on a need to know basis, meaning a user only has access to what they should and not any more, not any less? You know, do they have passwords set to change and to be complex when they select passwords for the various systems that they log into? Do they have HIPAA compliant backups? Do they share any personal or confidential information via email when they're speaking with each other or with patients? And if so, is that secure? Do they have encryption? And so those are just a few of sort of the technical items we look at from that standpoint. And then essentially we're able to generate a report and sort of have a remediation and discuss those results with each organization. And then at that point, it's up to them to work with whether it be us, you know, or if they have a separate IT vendor to remediate those items. And some of it, like the policy and procedure side, a lot of that would really fall on the practice. So.
Okay, so, you know, my hope is that every practice, you know, the minute they get set up, this is one of the things on their to-do list, but often that's not the case. When do you find yourself getting called in? Is it typically after there's already been some kind of breach or complaint?
Unfortunately, yes. You know, timing is everything. Until something bad happens, we're usually not getting that call. The good news is for the people that are not waiting until the last minute, you know, there's a lot of proactive measures that we try to do ahead of time to avoid these kinds of things. But it is typically last minute that you're hearing from this. Now, I will say one item that's really helped, though, in this is if you're familiar with MIPS or MACRA, the government reporting program, it used to be meaningful use. It was like an incentive offered to a lot of practices for kind of partaking in having a medical EMR system and making sure it's secure. And so there's incentive dollars that the government offers. One requirement of that is having a HIPAA security risk assessment. So that has helped quite a bit in getting certain practices that maybe normally would not have done that act to do it. So that's actually worked in our favor.
Oh, that sounds great. I mean, when we get involved with HIPAA, it's typically because somebody's done something or a complaint has been made. You know, some of the examples I can think of are, like I mentioned, a laptop getting stolen. But, you know, we will have one employee looking up another employee's medical record when they know that employee's been to the hospital and they have hospital portal access, or we've had employees who might be doing work from home for some reason on their laptop, just showing people's records to others, even though it seems inconceivable that they would not have understood that that, you know, was not acceptable. You know, and so there, usually when we get involved, other than the, you know, the original training and maybe policy manual that we might put together, it's usually because something bad has happened. I would assume on your side that you're really getting those calls when there's technology issues, when somebody is maybe trying to hack an email or hack a computer. Do you usually find that the protections in place prevent that, or is it more a having the proper responses in place when that happens?
I would say it's a combination of both. I think anyone in the technology world will tell you nothing is 100%. You know, we strive to go to 99.9%. And the key really is to have, from a security standpoint, is to have layers, right? Do you have something protecting your network, you know, that has access to logs and monitors your system, like a firewall? Is it robust enough to do that? Now, within each device, do you have proper antivirus, anti-malware solutions? Do you have any other security services within your organization, whether it be phishing services of emails, for example, or sort of upgraded antivirus solutions that can really help monitor this kind of stuff? And as you have more and more of those layers, the amount of security breaches or risks you come across goes down drastically. But then furthermore, once something does happen, you absolutely need to have the proper controls in place to make sure that the response time is there. One of the items in our security risk assessment we look for is, do they have what we call a breach incident report or a breach investigative report, which is sort of a document internally that they want to make sure they're documenting any breaches and incidents and notifying all the right priorities that they need to. And so that comes into play and is a really, really big, big piece.
Yeah, I find people try to sweep things under the rug or hide things when bad things happen. And it's not just about HIPAA. So you might, something may happen and you try and just fix it going forward, but don't necessarily let anybody know what happened. I'm sure there are plenty of HIPAA breaches that are not reported. There's lots of times that people think they can get away with it. And from my experience, I mean, either somebody's going to find out. So for example, a lot of medical practices that might be part of a larger system, they might be independent, but kind of part of a hospital EMR system or part of, you know, there's relationships. If an employee who works in the physician's office tries to look up a patient who's not a patient of the practice, they immediately will be contacted by the compliance office at the hospital. And that can be a really big issue for the practice and certainly for the employee. So when we think sometimes we can get away with things, we can't always do it. And practices have to go in with the mindset that there's always somebody looking and watching. And I think, as things get more sophisticated, those kinds of alerts where people can see what's going on, I always tell my clients that they should really know. And they can look at audit trails to see where people in their office are going. Do you recommend that to your clients as well? And, what kind of things do you see going on in practices, that they could prevent quite easily that, they're not always thinking of?
Yeah. So yes, we see a lot of that happening as you kind of mentioned. And I think the biggest piece is first and foremost, the biggest thing we notice is when people don't work with a certified HIPAA compliant IT vendor. There's many, many vendors out there that say they work with the medical space, but when it comes to HIPAA security and knowledge and expertise, they don't have it like a true MSP that is in that space would have. And once we do that, some of the things is there's a lot of security patches that come. So Microsoft, Windows PC, as much as I think a lot of people will have their battles between PCs and Macs, PCs are still king of the world in the business side. And there's a ton of patches and security updates that Microsoft sends. And not having those up to date is something as simple as not clicking update on your computer to update those patches can be a huge, huge impact to you. I'll give you an example. Very large organization, and this is public knowledge right now, but DuPage Medical had to deal with a lot of fines and breaches. And that was one item that popped up in there, was that devices were not patched. There were not up-to-date security patches. That was a big, big piece. And it's a very simple fix. Most IT vendors, like ourselves included, have automated systems in place where on the back end, all these patches run. And if there's certain patches that need to be pushed out ahead of others, we have the ability to control that. But that's probably a big piece that we're seeing out there. The other thing, and you kind of touched on it, which is people looking at things that they shouldn't. One of the best ways to avoid that is just to ensure when their accounts are set up, whether it's logging into their computer or logging into the electronic medical record system they use, it's set up, the credentialing of it is based on their actual job title and no more, no less. And unfortunately, because people find it convenient from a workflow standpoint, you will find, a supervisor and their subordinate may have the same access when that's not really how it should be. And that unfortunately can also lead to a lot of security issues and breaches. On top of that, if you're logging into your Windows login, you should not have what they call administrative rights, because then that gives you the ability to just download anything you want on your device. And there should be some level of protocols in place to kind of avoid that. So having these usernames set up appropriately can really help kind of mitigate that piece.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, I think that people are just generally nosy. and, you know, so nosiness is one of the biggest things. And I actually find that we always have HIPAA issues right after I give a lecture about HIPAA. So it's almost like they wanted to test to see whether they really would get in trouble. But, you know, nosiness is a big factor, and laziness, you know, the idea that you, you know, write down your password somewhere obvious, you share passwords. I mean, I've had situations where somebody comes in and they hadn't had a chance yet to get, again, with these practices that are sometimes part of a larger EMR system with a hospital, which is very common, you know, when maybe it's North Shore or one of those, and you have affiliated practice groups, and maybe they haven't gone through all the training yet, but the practice wants to get them working right away. So they just have one of the administrators let them use a password. You know, that's not okay, right? Mm-mm. So, you know, here's the thing. You need to have very strict protocols in your office. When people violate HIPAA or any other rule, there needs to be consequences. The problem is that practices, you might have a great worker who did something dumb, right? And nobody really wants to enforce HIPAA. Sometimes you might lose a great employee. So I really think the best way to do that is to really emphasize to your employees that, you know, it is so important that they you would have no choice but to terminate them, reprimand them, suspend them, whatever it is. Because not only does it protect your practice when you take those actions, should anybody come in and investigate, but your relationship with the hospitals or other facilities or organizations dependent on them knowing that you're going to take appropriate action as well. So it's kind of like, you know, people want to take the easy way out, and sometimes you jump around through all these hoops, but you need to. And if you fail to, there's consequences. So I think technology has made our lives easier, but at the same time, harder. And, you know, one of the things also, and I don't know if you have this in your office, but I'm just hit by spam continually. And we have a lot of technology videos or security videos that we're required to watch all the time.
Yeah.
And I pretty much fail every random test they run. Because, you know, when people send you an email and it's coming from someone you know and trust, and it seems like totally normal that they would send you something, you know, not opening it, not clicking on it, just kind of counterintuitive. But I would guess in a medical practice, even more important, because, you know, in a scenario, I mean, I don't hold data on my computer myself, everything's on a server, but in a medical practice, that's obviously not always the case. And so I guess I'm curious, are those same kind of scams going on in medical practice? Are doctors, nurses, other people, or dentists, whatever, getting emails, and also, you know, with maybe a patient record attached, or, you know, thinking that it's legit and not really realizing it?
Yeah, so I actually have a specific example to you, and it ties into your initial question about when do people come to you? Is it after they're already in trouble? And so I'll share an example with you. There was a practice where the head doctor was out of town and sent an email to the HR contact saying, Miss Smith, you know, we're not going to use names here, but Miss Smith, I had to change my bank account. And so I know payroll is coming up. Can you please switch it to this? Without thinking twice, because the name appeared to be the name of the main doctor, this HR person went ahead and changed it to the instructions that were given. Well, guess what? When that paycheck came for that doctor, the day of the paycheck, the doctor actually went to HR and said, hey, where's my paycheck? And they're like, well, what do you mean? You told me to switch it to this bank account. And they were like, no, I didn't. And then when we got down to the nitty gritty, you found out that, you know, the name was kind of disguised, but when you looked at the email, it wasn't really their email. And there was just that whole piece that happened, right? But prior to that, we had been advertising a phishing service that we offer to our clients for this exact scenario to avoid. And what you do in that scenario is ultimately we set up a phishing training, as we call it, for all the users. Where it tells you, don't click on this, look out for this, here are some red flags to look for, right? And then once you complete the training, however frequently they want, we typically recommend at least twice a month, and you could do it weekly, we send phishing tests. So you would get one from, you know, let's say, you know, you're my boss. You might get an email from Fahim that says, oh, hey, Erica, click on this attachment. Tell me what you think about it. I did this, you know, for you, like you asked. And if you think, well, I never asked Fahim to do an attachment, what is this, right? Well, are you going to click on it? And then if you click on it, right, then a little gotcha kind of message pops up and it gives you a quick kind of 2-minute training that says why you should have suspected that this was suspicious. Right. And the goal behind that is, in the beginning, you'll probably have people clicking on a lot of stuff they shouldn't, right, but over time it should go away. And if you kind of enforce that in your organization, it can make a huge difference.
Right. So no, I'm the person who clicks, but I'll tell you, I am fairly suspicious. In the past couple of times, I've actually gotten emails from people I know. One was a former partner in my firm. The other one was a client, which happened last week. And we are working on something. And he sent me an email saying, I put this together. And I was waiting for him to put something together. But I was like, something in me said, wait a second, maybe it's not real. So I actually pulled up a brand new email. And I said, hey, I just got an email from you and I just want to make sure that that was legitimate, you know? And I got a response back saying, yeah, I'm sending you what I told you I was going to send you, okay? So I went ahead and clicked on it and it took me to like some very weird page. And then I was like kind of freaked out that I realized, no, something has happened here, you know? What is going on? And I sent it to my IT department. Of course, I have to reset all my passwords, but I actually called the client because—
That's what I would have done first, yeah. You should have called, yeah.
Not only was somebody wasn't just spoofing him, somebody was actually in his email. So they can go so far now. And I guess, you know, the risk for law firms, and there's a couple of really big firms here in Chicago where they were, they had all their records seized and they were, you know, ransom was being demanded. I mean, that's huge. I mean, we have confidential records. I can only imagine if that happens for a medical practice. And
absolutely.
Anything like that happen?
So there's been many times it's happened. So I'll actually tell you about, are you familiar with encryption at all?
Like the average person?
Just like, all right. So we like to call that our get out of jail free card. This was not a client that was under us. This was a client that came to us after the fact. And they had a number of laptops with patient health info in there that ended up getting stolen. Well, you know, Office of Civil Rights, OCR, says if it's 500 medical records or more compromised, you must report that. And they even have what they call a wall of shame, where it's posted online and brags to everyone that, you know, this company did this and look what they did. And then you also have to notify every single individual whose information could have been potentially compromised. So one great way to mitigate that is to have your device encrypted. Encryption is what we like to call our get out of jail free card. In the event any device is stolen with patient health information and you have it properly encrypted and can prove that, you don't have to report anything, no matter how many records there was. And so that's really the beauty of that. The other thing I'll tell you too, our current CEO, Keith Noll, he came from healthcare, and prior to coming on as our CEO, he dealt personally with an actual HIPAA audit. And he said his exact words, "I would never wish my worst enemy to go through that." And so I think that's really motivated him, you know, for our organization to really ensure we continue to stay proactive and have checks and balances in place to help our clients to never be put in that position.
Great. Well, I think this is really helpful. I hope, you know, everybody who's listening thinks for a second about, you know, have I ever had this kind of audit done? Is it time to maybe do a new audit? You know, when was the last time I looked at the policies? What are we doing that's putting us at risk? What can we do better? And, you know, to call you or someone who does what you do to kind of protect themselves. You're right. I've dealt with HIPAA audits myself, and it is not a pleasant experience. It's easily avoidable, I think, for the most part, with precautions and training. Are there any final last words you want to share with us on this topic?
No, I just encourage everyone, please, if you have not, please do get a HIPAA security risk assessment. Don't be on the wall of shame. Don't be that person. And if you guys need any assistance, there's plenty of people out there to help. But if there's anything we can do, technical doctor, my name is Fahim. I'm happy to help out. www.technicaldr.com. We also have followers on Twitter as well.
Great. And we'll be sharing your information when we post this. I thank you so much for joining us today. And thanks to all of you out there. I'm Erica Adler, and this is the Health Law Hotspot. You can also see our other podcasts at ralaw.com, and feel free to reach out with any questions. Thanks so much, and see you next time.
Thank you.
Retzel Health Law Hotspot is made available by the firm and its attorneys for educational purposes and to provide general information, not to provide specific legal advice. Use of the Retzel Health Law Hotspot does not create an attorney-client relationship between you and the firm or any of its attorneys. The Retzel Health Law Hotspot should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice, and you should contact an attorney in your state about any legal needs or questions you may have.